I'm Afshin Ratansi. Welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Today, some Americans will wave their flags and fire up the barbecues for the 250th anniversary of their independence from Britain. The Republic, the defeated British tyranny, has become a globe-spanning empire in its own right. Over 800 military bases and trillions squandered on endless wars, while it sinks deeper into a national debt nearing $40 trillion, with 42 million at home relying on food stamps to afford to eat. This is the so-called land of the free, where the government has been bought and paid for by special interests, above all the pro-Israel lobby that writes the checks, vets the candidates, and polices what constitutes acceptable speech. The neoconservative foreign policy of American exceptionalism has delivered nothing but mass killing and chaos across Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Lebanon, and Palestine. And this July the 4th, especially pertinent in its roll call of military defeats since Korea, is its catastrophic failure against Iran. Today, Iran begins funeral ceremonies for Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, killed with members of his family by Trump on the opening day of the U.S.-Israeli strikes that slaughtered thousands of civilians, including more than 100 schoolchildren, in Minab. Iran's devastating retaliation and the costs inflicted on Washington have exposed the limits of American power and, to some, signal the beginning of the end of U.S. empire. Joining me again from Cleveland, Ohio, is veteran U.S. Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who has spent his entire political career, including two presidential runs, exposing and confronting the military-industrial complex. Thank you so much, Dennis. Happy July the 4th. For coming back on Going Underground, let's get straight to the war powers legislation failing in Congress to stop the wars on Iran. How would you characterize this 250th birthday of the United States, along with the warnings of Washington, Jefferson, Madison, John Quincy Adams? I have a whole list here, but you probably know them by heart.
Well, first of all, happy 4th of July, and I celebrate it because of my connection with those founding principles that guarantee life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, that connect us with a dream of real independence, or where people have their liberties protected. That's the America that I not just identify with, but I fight for. It's not where we are now, as you recognize. Now let's get to the War Powers Act. Frankly, what I would do is just cut off funds. Because you could argue about whether the president is going to be subject to what Congress wants in terms of Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution, which gives Congress the power to declare war. Bottom line is, cut off the funds, but they're not ready to do that. Think about that.
Yeah, that kind of neatly leads me into the articles of impeachment. I mean, on this show, I think I've said it, that after the midterms, one would, especially if the Senate, actually only if the Senate goes Democrat in the midterms, Trump would be impeached. You brought 35 articles of impeachment against Bush when you were in Congress in 2008, let alone your impeachment articles against Dick Cheney. But I mean, surely, I mean, there's now information coming out about personal enrichment of Donald Trump. You, though, say that Democrats don't want impeachment of Trump for their own partisan political reasons.
Well, Trump is, at this point, is the Democrats' ticket to taking the White House in 2028, or so many Democrats think. And so if he is impeached and removed, and it's not guaranteed he'd be removed because the Senate, you need two-thirds vote. But for the sake of discussion, let's say that happens, then J.D. Vance becomes president. And he's much tougher to defeat if he becomes president as opposed to being a Republican candidate. So I think the Democrats are going to continue to attack Trump. And, you know, for all the reasons that we're familiar, and at the same time, I doubt very seriously that they'll make an attempt to knock him out of office.
Even though opinion polls show a majority of the American people, I know the American people get forgotten on this July 4th and beyond and before it. Even the majority of the American people, even though they want him impeached, that doesn't matter.
Then I have a vote. Let's get real. I mean, this is a constitutional process where the House of Representatives has to vote articles of impeachment that's similar to an indictment, and where the trial is held in the Senate, and you need two-thirds votes to convict on any single article, and then the president is removed. I don't think that's going to happen. I think, and the reason why it won't happen is partisan politics, because the Democrats would much rather hold Trump out there as a person to attack than to have to confront J.D. Vance, who might be a lot tougher to go after as president.
So axiomatic in that is that Trump is hated by the American people. You have to come on this autumn then around the midterms, and we can argue about that. But while all of that may be in the background, congressman paid up by Israel, busy on the National Defense Authorization Act, not quite in time for today's Independence Day. Integration of the U.S. military with the military of Israel's. What was your reaction when you heard about this?
Well, you know, there's a couple things. First of all, America's a sovereign nation still. And if we bring another nation into, we integrate that nation into our military, and it basically is being operated by both countries at the highest level of technology, you've created a merger. That merger does not serve the interests of the American people. It increases the risk of war. We know full well that Israel has embarked on a Zionist project of expansionism, which on the map includes Turkey and Egypt, as well as the areas that are now under attack. And, you know, people talk about the United States giving $4 billion a year for Israel's military. Well, with this proposal, Israel would have access to the entire $1.5 trillion annual budget of the United States in terms of being in a position to direct assets and resources at the top level. It really is against the interest of the United States, and frankly, it's unconstitutional. Now, you know, what's a constitution among friends, right? So if this issue passes, and it's been delayed right now because of some roilings in the House of Representatives over the inclusion of still another bill with the National Defense Authorization Act, this is almost too much information, but the rule went down, which enables a bill to go to the floor. The rule went down. The speaker sent everyone home. 2 weeks from in a couple weeks, the House will revisit this issue. But it is an active issue. It is a great concern. And given Israel's record and, you know, the fact that there are arrest warrants at the International Criminal Court for some of their leaders, and supposedly others will be issued for other of their leaders, and the IDF has shown a level of cruelty that has not been seen since World War II, and you know, with respect to the activities of Nazi Germany, that were committed against the Jews, which is astonishing when you think about it. So, yeah, should we be operating our military with them? No, not at all. It's not in our interest.
Yeah, in fairness, on the ICC, there's also an act, of course, that enables the United States to invade Holland militarily if they indict a American citizen. So I'm not sure how the ICC is that important. But I mean, let's just go to the July 4th quotes that I mentioned earlier. George Washington: "It's our true policy to steer clear of permanent alliances with any portion of the foreign world," 1796 in his farewell address. But on the other hand, we have your present ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, saying, "Without Israel, without the Jewish foundation, there would not be America." So think about that on July the 4th. What do you make about the fact that Mike Huckabee is saying things like that and said, "Are you not aware that our founders wanted to put as the seal of America the parting of the Red Sea?"
Well, you know, I know Ambassador Huckabee very well. And there's a lot about him that I like as a person. But he and he's not the only one, and others in the U.S. government have such a fierce dedication to Israel. And, you know, that would be fine except for one thing. Our first concern must always be the United States of America. You want to help another country, have sympathies for another country, that's one thing. But to direct our resources to have our policy guided by that other country goes right back to what you quoted George Washington saying. And it goes back to others who said, beware foreign entanglements. You know, the United States must pursue its own destiny and its own interest absent having visible or invisible hands. They're trying to push it in a direction of more war. We know that Israel was instrumental in pushing President Trump into attacking Iran with disastrous effect. So it's not in our interest to do that, not at all. And I've vocally opposed it, and we'll continue to do that.
I mean, does it shock you? You've always campaigned about campaign finance reform. So this is different to Eisenhower's military-industrial complex. This is Netanyahu as George III, basically. I mean, Israel is in that much control over U.S. foreign policy.
Well, you know, it's an interesting parallel that you've raised here, because our Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate today, July the 4th, was a declaration of independence from Great Britain. And it's my belief that we haven't traveled 250 years in this long journey to end up in the thrall of another country, in this case, Israel. And if it was any other country, frankly, Afshin, if they wanted a joint, wanted a merger with any other country, France, Germany, the UK, on and on and on, I would oppose it, because this has to do with our constitution, where the commander-in-chief has to have total control over the military. It has to do with our constitution, where the Senate has to, there's a treaty process. This is done by and the Senate plays a role in it in going over a treaty. What they've done is create a treaty-like situation, put it in legislation. Can't do that. It's unconstitutional. So, yeah, I mean, this is really a danger constitutionally. It's a danger militarily. It's a danger for national security. It's a danger for our sovereignty. It is a danger.
Yeah, I mean, the entangling alliances with none, Jefferson, in the inaugural address, I think 1801 is what you were referring to there. But do you think, in a way, you heard reflections of that in comments by J.D. Vance, who was sent out onto Podia to explain the war on Iran to the American people, when he said, just because something's good for Israel doesn't mean it's good for the United States?
Well, that's a reductionism that I think we can go along with. And this is why Vance could prove to be very formidable in 2028, because keep in mind that while I hope that matters will be settled with Iran and we get out of this war, which is a nightmare, and I just want to say while I'm on this program that how heartbroken I was and continue to be over what happened on February 28 to those children who were in the school at Manab in Iran and who were killed by these missile attacks. That is a stain on our country's conscience that still needs to be reckoned with. And the deaths of the other leaders in Iran. This war has to end, but Vance is trying to do what he can, apparently, to try to end it. He's coming under attack from the neoconservative wing. It's not that Vance
is
liberal by any means.
We'll return to this in part two. I'll just stop you there. More from the veteran U.S. congressman and former presidential candidate after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with veteran U.S. Congressman and former presidential candidate, Dennis Kucinich. Dennis, I interrupted you in part one when you were talking about J.D. Vance and the nuances of how he plays this catastrophic war against Iran.
Well, Vance understands that that it's imperative to bring us to an end. I think Trump does too, by the way. But Trump seems to betwixt and between. He's got Israeli interests prevailing on him. He wants to end the war because the price of oil goes up, the price of gas goes up, inflation goes up, and the fortunes of the Republican Party go down in November. So he sent Vance there to, even though the negotiations are not happening right now, but he sent Vance there to on a mission to try to see if he could figure out a way to resolve this. On the other hand, you have Marco Rubio, who is, as Secretary of State, has been very clear about not just his support for Israel, but his determination to continue to push back against any concessions whatsoever to Iran. And I just want to make one other point. Maybe this can go and, you know, bring us into a broader discussion here of geopolitically, and that is, I am astonished the degree to which among Democrats, the issue of Russia still exists, and it's pretty hardwired at this point in the party. So if the Democrats were to take the Congress or take the presidency in 2028, you still have this this pull towards escalating in, you know, with Russia over Ukraine. I don't think Trump wants to do that, by the way. I'm sure he doesn't.
What did you make of those remarks that were reported about Trump telling Zelensky, fire on Moscow, basically?
Trump sends out dozens of tweets some days. And, you know, he's garrulous, I guess would be the word. He likes to talk. He likes to say things. And I would not bet my foreign policy on an offhanded remark by President Trump. On the other hand, he could have been saying that because he wants to cause Europe to get deeper enmeshed in the conflict so as to put itself in a very precarious position financially as well as militarily. And that could somehow work out to the advantage of the United States. I you know, we're at a level of politics here where what is unseen is more significant than what is seen. I'm hopeful that we can end this conflict in Iran, stop the war, no further escalation, end it, come to terms with Iran on one hand, and that we can play a role in winding down the conflict between Ukraine and Russia.
But just, on the practical concerns there, we were just talking about the NDAA. If Israel is in so much control, controls your Congress, and has people in his cabinet, his ambassador to the UN, his head of the CIA, has Rubio, the Secretary of State, do you think Iran is making a mistake in thinking this MOU has any validity whatsoever?
Well, the MOU doesn't have any validity at this point because everything in it has been basically nullified. I mean, it's one thing to talk about it. The other thing is, do you stand by it when you have to make a move and say, okay, here's our move. We're going to unfreeze your funds, for example. Here's some money as a good faith gesture. That's not happening. So, you know.
But is Iran being weak?
No, my gosh. I mean, Iran has experience with the United States and negotiations. And, you know, the U.S., directly or indirectly, has seen some of Iran's negotiators disappear, get murdered. Who did it? I don't know. But, you know, the fact that, and, you know, maybe Israel. But the
Trump explicitly threatened to kill the ones for this MOU, just ahead of the Versailles signing.
You know, this is part of the nightmare of a transformation in diplomacy. From actually people talking to each other, or just putting a gun on the table and say, let's talk. I think when you put that gun on the table, you have to be prepared to use it. And it's been used too many times in our approach in the United States to dealing with other nations. And it's an approach that I totally reject because, you know, we have failed to advance the science of human relations here. And I'm not talking theoretically. When you travel the world and you meet with people, people are so much alike the world over. Yes, we have different nationalities and religions and customs and languages, but there's still a possibility of human unity on some basic issues that relate to peace. And we're not seeing that right now. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I ran for president twice before, because I see another possibility in a world where war does not become a constant factor, where we achieve strength through peace, not peace through strength of a $1.5 trillion annual military budget.
But it may be unethical, but at least this July 4th, there is some transparency there. And that automatically creates questions like, are Iran and Russia, let alone China, being weak, given the gangsterism of the United States foreign policy is on open display?
No. Today, Iran's proven that it has resilience. Russia has demonstrated resilience and patience. I mean, you know, I mentioned the Nob a moment ago. Think of Starobilsk in Luhansk province, where those students at the dormitory were killed in that drone strike. It's horrible. I mean, it's a tragedy for the world, not just, you know, for the people in the oblast and for Russia.
Is there reporting of it in the United States? Any reporting of it? Civilians being killed by American weapons in Russia?
Let's face it. The Western media generally is not going very deep into anything that might evoke sympathy for Iran or Russia or any other country. I mean, this is part of an agenda, which I reject, and I feel very strongly that the U.S. must, and the Trump administration has an opportunity here to play a role in de-escalating the situation in Ukraine, not in escalating it, and in counseling England, France, and Great Britain, France, and Germany, don't go thinking about an attack. And even, let me just state this option. If you look at the, if I was sitting as an official in the Kremlin and I looked at what was happening in Europe right now, where these dark discussions about preparing for an attack on Russia, preparing for war on Russia, you know, I'd be thinking, well, maybe this is time to play the Suvaki card, you know, and looking at that that gap there, between, along the border in the Baltics. You know, we have to be careful that we are not instrumental in triggering a wider war, and it could happen. And that's why I counsel repeatedly diplomacy, de-escalation, find a way to resolve these differences without escalating a war that, let's face it, always has the potential to spin out of control.
It could have happened by the time this is being broadcast on July the 4th. There have been reports of opposition to Vladimir Putin in his own country for being not as responsive to the terror attacks on Russia. You seem to be suggesting that Trump himself doesn't want to go to war with Russia, but then those people around him, what do you think Marco Rubio wants to do, and John Ratcliffe and other members of his cabinet? You, of course, were chief of staff to RFK Jr. I know he's the health secretary. Presumably, he wouldn't want a full-scale war with Russia.
Well, as his campaign manager, I always advocated for peace and for peaceful relations. That doesn't mean you're just going to, you know, put your chin forward and ask somebody to hit you. But in this case, I don't think Donald Trump wants to be instrumental in stirring up and putting...
Even if it's a pivot from Iran, the failure and the defeat in Iran, would that not be a pivot?
Look, the U.S. bond market right now is very fragile. People are moving, you know, money out of U.S. investments. There's a danger. The U.S. is not in great financial shape. You mentioned a $40 trillion budget deficit, or $40 trillion in debt, national debt. We don't have endless resources here. I mean, if you look at, there's a lot of similarities between conditions in Russia and the United States, for example. You know, people worry about economic instability, the cost of living, the What's the war cost? The U.S. is already in the Iraq war, could run up $1 trillion in total costs. People here worry about their personal safety. We're worried about our constitution, the digital infrastructure that may compromise our privacy and our, these are things that are common in nations. I don't think that Donald Trump wants to accelerate a conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Now, it doesn't mean that he has a soft spot in his heart for Europe. As we know, one of the first things that J.D. Vance did when he became vice president was lecture the European community on what he saw was its weakness. And they've been coaxing them to spend more money on defense, but that actually makes them more reliant on the United States, not less reliant. So there's economic factors here. Bottom line, though, I do not believe that Trump has any interest in moving forward with assisting Europe. And Europe, by the way, right now, land, air, sea, access to ordnance, organization, coalescing, they're not that strong. This is
no, it's being enabled by the United States or Trump, which is the point. Let's just finally and very briefly, since it is July 4th, just tell me your assessment of the condition of the American working classes amidst all of this. They must be bombarded by your media, as you implied earlier, Paramount, Skydance, CNN, CBS, massive mergers of your propaganda networks. What is the condition this July 4th of the American working classes to gain that peaceful world you want?
The cost of housing has gone up. Inflation has taken a real hold. People have massive educational loans. Our young people are rebelling on that. There's shifts going on in the Democratic Party because of that. People are toppling mainstream Democratic figures in congressional elections on economic issues and also on the issue of Israel. Americans are concerned. They're concerned about the future. People's savings have been exhausted. Their 401ks are sometimes at risk because of gains in the marketplace. Social Security is always being bandied about as something they could cut resources. I mean, see, these are people throughout the world have economic concerns. America's no different. That's why we cannot keep going into war. War is a loser. The only people who make money in war are the people that make the weapons. Everyone else loses.
Dennis Kucinich, happy July 4th. Thank you.
Sure.
That's it for the show. Condolences, of course, to all those of you bereaved or affected by Washington's wars of aggression. We're back on Monday to ask Britain's former defense minister why he thinks a UK that just lost its prime minister over Jeffrey Epstein can defeat the Russian Federation. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.